You are listening to the RTE Brainstorm Podcast, proudly supported by Research Ireland.
Hi, my name is Ella McSweeney, and this is Brainstorm. If you want to know about new ideas from the world around you, then this is the podcast for you. Why do we clock in every day? Is it for passion, purpose, or just a paycheck? If you love your job, or you hate it, or you're still figuring that one out, what are the motivations, challenges, and purpose behind what we do? Well, Kevin Murphy holds the Kemi Chair in the Department of Work and Employment Studies in the University of Limerick. And for 40 years, he's worked at universities in the United States and Ireland. He's written 13 books on the topic, looking at honesty in the workplace, emotional intelligence, gender at work, and research methods. Kevin, in 1930, there was this famous essay by John Maynard Keynes, Economic Possibilities for Our Grandchildren. And in it, he basically predicted that by 2030, we'd all be richer, we'd be more technologically advanced, that scarcity would be a thing of the past, and we'd only be working 15 hours a week, that we would have so much time on our hands, we wouldn't know what to do with it. What in God's name went wrong, Kevin?
That prediction has been around for a long time. We're hearing it again now with AI that says, a few years in the future, you won't have to work anymore. And it's never worked before, and I don't think it's going to work this time either. We're working more hours than we have in the past, pretty much across the board. And the idea that we're going to have more leisure as there's more technology just never panned out, because as technology advances, the nature of what we do keeps changing.
So for him, I suppose the idea is once we had enough, this idea of enough, like enough economic growth, enough stuff, we have our basics, that we'd relax. But in fact, what we're doing is we're working more than ever, aren't we? The more money we earn, the less likely we are to take time off. It's almost like the reward for work is more work.
Yeah, enough turns out to be a slippery concept, that wherever you are, you keep resetting that number.
What does work mean to you personally? I mean, why do you work?
I'm an organizational psychologist, and I've been thinking for a long time about why we work. And there's obvious answers and less obvious ones. The obvious one is we need to pay the bills. People work because they need to get money, and that's plain and simple, although there are many, many layers on that. You may get salary, you may get benefits, you may get all sorts of other things from your organization. And it's sometimes hard to balance all those things out. But that's the easy one. I think there are three other reasons why people work that people maybe spend less time thinking about. The first one for me, once we get beyond making a salary, is that work provides structure for your life. If you think about it, from childhood to young adulthood, it's school that provides structure. You know where you're supposed to be Monday through Friday. You know what you're supposed to do. You have assignments laid out. And it also says there's 2 days of the week where you have time off. Work does the same thing from young adulthood through senior citizen stage. It provides you structure. It tells you where you're supposed to be, what you're supposed to be doing, when you're supposed to be working. And in fact, this is one of the reasons why retirement can be so difficult for so many people. They lose their structure. I retired a couple of years ago, and I, from time to time, will say, I don't remember exactly what day of the week it is because I don't have that same.
You don't need
I don't
to know
that on Wednesday there's a meeting.
So we're kind of stuck in a schedule that starts when we're 4 or 5, when we start to go to school, and we never get out of it until we retire.
Absolutely. I always like, there's a scene in Downton Abbey where Maggie Smith's character has no idea what a weekend is, because for her, it's never made any difference what day of the week it was. She didn't work. She didn't have any structure. But for most of us, we've got this, and it tells us what to do, where to be. Makes planning your life a whole lot simpler because you don't have to make a lot of plans. So that providing structure turns out to be quite important. The third thing is identity. Work is part of people's self-image. If you ask me, tell me about yourself, I'm going to probably say I'm a professor. I've been retired for years. I haven't been an actual professor for a while, but this is how I think about myself. This is how people think about me. And so it's a big part of your identity. Now, some people are more involved in work, and I think it's probably stronger in some professions and in some higher level workplaces. And there may be some places where you don't really care an awful lot about what you do, but no matter what your job is, that is part of how you think about yourself and how people think about you. The last one is social engagement. This is where you work is where you interact with people outside of your regular immediate family and immediate social circle. This is how you interact with a lot of the rest of the world in some sustained and meaningful way. And this is an important part. And again, this is one of the things that comes up when you hit retirement. A lot of people now have lost their social connection and end up doing what I do. I volunteer at a food bank every couple days a week, in part so I get out of the house, I get interacting with people, I get dealing with different folks, and I think it's a big part of staying part of society.
We all had real insights. We had a real insight into that during the pandemic, didn't we? The idea that you can work from home seemed fairly nice in the beginning. And by the end, so many of us were just tearing our hairs out, wanting to go anywhere but home and do a bit of work.
And work from home is really interesting stuff because it really did disengage that whole part. And now people are trying to figure out, is it worth it? To go back to the office. There are going to be some real benefits, but there are some real downsides too. Now you go back, you've got commuting, you got all the expense and the trouble, and you also have office politics, bullying, all the bad things that go on in the office. And it's a tough call. But I think for a lot of people, the call is, I'll put up with all of that because I got to get out of the house. I got to interact with people. And this is not working for me.
And I don't want to do the dishes at 10 o'clock in the morning. You've been thinking so deeply about why we work for a long time. And I'm just wondering, I don't know, 200, 300 years ago, what relationship did we have with work? Was there even a concept of work as something that we spent our time doing? What would be a typical day, a typical week for someone back then?
It's been an interesting question, and historians don't fully understand how work was organized before the Industrial Revolution. But I do think that is a point at which things changed, mainly in the sense that many more people were now working in organizations as opposed to working out of the house. So you think about it, 200 years ago, you might be a craftsman working in your house, putting together tools and objects, or knitting, or doing any of a variety of things, but you would do it in your own setting. I think when we started bringing people together into organizations, that changed a lot of things, including setting up this barrier between work and non-work. Now we have two completely separate worlds, the one where we spend 40 or 40 plus hours, or if you're Elon Musk, 120 hours a week at work. And then the other where we do everything else. And I think that's a pretty modern thing, we think.
And the idea of work and the development of work for, you know, at that stage, it would have been young teenagers, wouldn't it, if not children. But then it going parallel with the development of schools so that schools and work tracked, you know, together.
Yeah, very much so. So that, you know, that whole transition from largely being rural, largely being on your own or in your family or in a small family group, to being into a more integrated society, but a less supportive society, I think, in a lot of ways. That's been a big change. But on the other hand, you know, we've had large organized work for a long, long time. People didn't build the pyramids by just working from home. You know, this involved large-scale organizations over a long period of time, the building of cathedrals in the 12th century. This was something that, so this phenomenon of working in organization is not completely new, but I think what is new is a much larger portion of the population finds going to school and then working in organizations as just part of normal life. And that was not necessarily the case 200 years ago.
I mean, reaching back thousands of years ago, how did the advent of farming change people's idea of work and of time, I suppose? I mean, we still have the idea of the summer holidays. I mean, that comes from farming, doesn't it? So there's people there to bring the harvest in, young people. But how did farming in particular change how we think about how we use our time, how we split up the day and how we work?
Well, it did two things. It not only changed time, but it changed people's thinking about place. Prior to the advent of farming, people were largely nomadic, and farming settles you in a place. It creates this whole idea of like ownership of land, sharing of resources like irrigation canals. And it also creates a whole set of demands that says, this is a time when you need to plant. This is a time when you need to do other things. This is a time when you need to harvest. And so it started to create some structured demands on life that came from the nature of what you're doing on a farm. And I think, you know, that if you talk to farmers, one of the big themes is that it never goes away. There's always something that needs to be done. And that one of the things that makes this a very grinding sort of way to make a living is that you don't get many days off.
Mm. I suppose when you're looking at things like hunter-gatherer societies, they'll often only spend, I don't know, about 10 to 15 hours a week working to meet their material needs. So enough food, enough shelter, enough water and all the rest. And there doesn't seem a lot of evidence to show that they go beyond that in terms of what would be generally classified under the phrase work. So I'm just wondering where the big shift came. I mean, the idea that with wealth, we generate these new needs, these new desires, that we go above and beyond what we basically need to exist and live yeah. healthily and well.
I think there are a lot of theories about this, but the one that's most compelling to me is that when you're nomadic, the idea of accumulating stuff doesn't make any sense because you've got to drag it around with you. And when you start becoming settled, now you can think, well, maybe I could build a storehouse for my grain. And now maybe I can have five storehouses for everyone's grain. And so at least from the earliest set of ideas that accumulation requires you to be in a place where you can keep your stuff. And I think that was perhaps the first big change in how people allocated their time. When you go from nomadic to settled, accumulation becomes feasible and then it becomes desirable. And I think that's been a theme that doesn't turn off. And that's where the early ideas that, you know, at some point we'll just have enough and we won't have to work anymore. That's turned out to be wrong. That people don't have any idea, a fixed idea of what is enough. It's very rare, for example, for a person, unless they're in the very, very top stratosphere, to think of themselves as wealthy. So if you talk to people who are actual millionaires, most of them say, oh, you know, no, I'm not wealthy. I'm sort of getting by and I'm doing okay, but I need to,
relative, isn't it?
I need more. Yeah. And I think that is something that is built into the way that we think about things. And it means that we're not going to stop chasing the dollar, no matter how many dollars we have, unfortunately.
Can you talk a bit about the role of advertising in shaping people's desires and stimulating them to work more and more and more? Because I imagine in a world where advertising is banned, possibly you would find that the idea of working for what you need to get by might be a little bit more possible for people, a little bit more acceptable.
Well, it's an interesting idea. I'm not fully convinced because advertising, at least as we think about it, is a relatively modern phenomenon. But people have been into the accumulation business a long time before ad agencies existed. Yeah, go tour Versailles if you want to see what an accumulation looks like when you really push it pretty far. So I'm not sure that advertising has changed things fundamentally. I think what it has done is says it's given you a wider set of ideas of what you might do with your accumulated wealth, and it might have changed some of the ideas. But I'm not sure that that's pushed us in the way that it sometimes advertisers claim, at least.
What's been your least fulfilling job that you've had in your life? And can you describe why?
Sure. I spent 3 years as a department head in a large psychology department at a major university. And it was both the best job and the worst job I ever had. It's the best job because you can sometimes do important and useful and interesting things. And it's the worst job because you're responsible for people whose behavior you really can't control. And what every department head I've ever known says that 90% of your problems will come from 10% of your faculty. And that was always the case. So you're always fighting fires and dealing with people who have very good jobs and are paid very well and are dissatisfied with one darn thing after another. And that gets to be pretty soul destroying.
But so, yeah, hell is other people.
Yeah. But on the other hand, you know, before I became an academic, I had other jobs. And now that I'm working in the food bank, I've come back to appreciate something I knew when I was much younger. A lot of jobs wear you right out. I mean, I come back from the food bank some days and I'm a physical wreck just from lifting and carrying and running around. And we forget how many jobs are physically demanding, how many jobs are dangerous. The number of people who are killed at work, it runs in the thousands every year in almost every country. The number of people who are injured in the tens of thousands, the number of people whose health is adversely affected by the nature of the work, by what they're required to do, by the circumstances they work in. Those are just horrific things. And so whenever I catch myself whining about how hard it is working in an office, I say, well, no, this is indoor work without heavy lifting. I got to keep that in mind when I complain about my work.
So the idea that meaningful, fulfilling work, really, it's a luxury end of things.
It's an amazing luxury because, you know, I think that one of the things that's difficult about the world of work is that you often don't get much opportunity to do things that are meaningful or fulfilling. So if you spend your life staring at spreadsheets, you may not feel like this is the thing that makes you an authentic human being. And you're probably right. I think lots of work, whether it's indoor work without heavy lifting, you know, office work, or whether it's work in other sorts of settings, really can be can eat you up and can be soul destroying in many ways. And so work is great when it's great. I always think of Neil Coward, who's quoted, "Work is more fun than fun." And that's one way of anchoring your whole attitude towards work.
You mentioned AI earlier. Yeah. I mean, how would you predict that's going to change things? I mean, it's all happening right now, but in 10, 15 yeah. years' time.
I think I've become a little jaded about predictions that this technology is going to change everything because I've lived through so many other technologies that are also going to change everything. And yes, some things have changed. So the way I do my work is a lot different now than it was prior to computers, but the nature of the work hasn't changed an awful lot. So I'm less sanguine about AI is going to make as big a difference as people think. I think it will displace some people. I think it's probably going to have bigger effects in jobs that right now are thought of as skilled jobs. You know, you go to your lawyer to write a will, and that takes a lot of work and it takes a fair amount of money. And it can be done with software in a matter of moments now. And I think that some of those jobs are going to be changed substantially. But I don't see the workplace being affected in quite the way people think, in part because we're seeing more and more of the potential downsides of AI.
the area that AI can't really help is the caring professions. And then we're having more and more older people in the community. And really, there's not a huge amount it can do there.
Yeah. I mean, there's and I think there's a whole sector of our economy, which is built on helping, serving, protecting others. And that is often very difficult work. It's often very badly paid work, but it's probably the work that's most insulated from AI. And so I think that those needs will not go away. You know, we hope at some point we'll start paying people more equitably for that type of work. But that is, so far, has not been the case.
I mean, do you think with John Maynard Keynes and his predictions, do you think ever we'll be able to only work 15 hours a week and that we will be looking around, searching for things to do with our leisure time? Do you think that's ever going to happen?
I don't think so. I think even if we reached the point where we could afford it, we wouldn't think we could afford it because, again, this whole notion of how much is enough. I know that my standard for that has changed over the years as my salary's gone up. But even if you had enough in terms of material accumulation, I do think that notion of having some structure to your life turns out to be very important to people. And people are often at a loss when they don't have obligations, when they don't have some clear sense of what they should be doing. And I don't see us ever getting close to the point of saying we'll spend most of our week with no clear structure whatsoever. So it may be that we'll stop doing as much paid work, but I don't think we'll stop doing work. I think we'll end up doing more volunteer work or more things that are there to get us out interacting with other people, keep our life organized in some way. And I don't see that changing in the foreseeable future.
So if you had to write an essay predicting working life and general life in 21, 25, we'll say, I don't know, 100 years from now, what do you predict for work and leisure and how we'll spend our time?
I think that some of the trends we're already seeing will magnify that the gap between people who work with their hands and people who don't is going to continue to grow. And I think that this is actually a very, very, very challenging thing for society. How do you fairly compensate people for taking on work that's demanding, that's difficult, that's necessary? And I think we haven't faced that now. And it looks like that's just getting worse and worse. If there's any place where you'd like to see a big change, I think it's going to be that. Let's rethink what we value and why we value it. And if you look at the caring professions, I think this is all an extension of gender discrimination. We think about things that men do as being more valuable than things that women do. And if you think about the caring professions, even if they're staffed by men, we tend to think about that as women's work. And that means it is not getting rewarded the same way. It's not getting valued the same way. And that is a huge blind spot in societies around the world. And I'm not optimistic it's going to change anytime soon. But this is, if you were really looking for what could we do to make the world of work better, it would probably be to say, you know, we got to stop thinking about men are valuable and women are not, and things that men are associated with are valuable and women are not. And that's, and I think if that changed, then we would start seeing at least the caring professions being much more equitably paid.
My thanks to Kevin Murphy. For more, go to rte.ie/brainstorm, and you can find Brainstorm in all the usual social places. We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's episode, and subscribe to Brainstorm wherever you get your podcasts. My name is Ella McSweeney. Until next time.
Brainstorm is produced by Adrian Carty. Research was by Hazel O'Leary and recorded by Shane Dempsey at Collaborative Studios. For RTE Brainstorm, thanks to Jim Carroll, Aoife Ryan Christensen and Neil Lane. The RTE Brainstorm podcast is proudly supported by Research Ireland.